The Adonis Audio Experience. One of the perks of being quarantined is that you get to make a lot of podcasts. Today, I'm fortunate to be joined by my baby brother, Jose, as we talk about sports and the political landscape. Jose is a history major, so it makes for a lot of fun in talking about politics, and he's played sports his entire life. So we get into it as we talk about the 2020 NBA Hall of Fame selection. All right, without further ado, here you go. Today is a very special episode. We are just freestyling here in this world of quarantine. I am on with my baby brother, who is probably my big baby brother, right? Jose Manuel. What's going on, Jose? How you doing, man?
Hey, Adonis. How are you? Just happy to be aboard, getting through quarantine life and, you know, taking it one day at a time.
Serious. You know, it's funny. We've been talking about doing an episode for quite some time. Every time we get on the phone, we're always getting really deep in conversation about politics, sports, and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was a good idea for us to put an episode together. And what's funny is that, just full disclosure to everybody, we have not planned anything. Am I right, Jose?
No, 100%. We have not planned anything. We're just, you know, going to speak from the heart.
So, about, you know. Yeah. So you're going to get this unfiltered, unedited, just full on out like Eddie Murphy raw. Right?
No, exactly. Exactly. That's the only way to be right now.
So, you know, I had a question, man. What's going on with this quarantine? I mean, how are things in New Jersey right now? Because I'll tell you, from a perspective in Connecticut, you know, we've had the governor Lamont, you know, put restrictions on businesses that are open or closed, what's essential, what's non-essential. I know that's been a big conversation in the national media as well.
Yes.
But what if things locally in Jersey, how's life in New Jersey been like for you?
So I've been working from home since St. Patrick's Day. That was a Tuesday. That was the day that they the company decided, you know, everybody's going to work from home now.
Wow.
Which is kind of easy with my job. I mean, you know, but it needed to be done. So, I mean, everything's really closed. No restaurant is open for dining. No bars are open. Everybody's just, you know, if you want to pick up food, anything like that. Honestly, the only thing I see open is like 7-Eleven, gas stations, supermarkets.
Wow. You know, they don't close for nobody.
Yeah, they don't close for anybody. And even those, I mean, like the supermarkets are closing at like 8 o'clock. They're not even staying open till their normal 11 or 12. I was driving the other night a little, like around 9, 10 o'clock. I mean, you would have thought it was 4 in the morning. Nobody's on the road.
Oh, my God. Everyone's just freaked out. And, you know, to put into perspective, I'm just like, everyone is really scared. And I mean, just this morning, I take a trip to the market and it's crazy. I just find myself going to the market now like every other day when maybe I should just buy enough so I don't have to go back. But I find myself going back. Now it's 100% almost. It feels like that people are wearing masks. And honestly, I'm still not wearing a mask. And it's so funny because in my head, I'm like, huh, they have masks, so I'm protected.
Yeah, you know, I haven't gotten a mask either, mask or gloves. I really haven't gone to that level. I wash my hands constantly now. I make it a point to wash my hands.
Oh, yeah, that I do for sure.
You know, I do have the bad habit of like rubbing my eyes like every 15 minutes, which I now notice that.
Yeah. So
I like really stopped myself from doing that now. You know, you do think twice now. You grab a door handle anywhere you go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you just can't wait to, you know, get some hand sanitizer if you can find any.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I go in the market, I check the shelves. The toilet paper and sanitizer struggle is real. I mean, there is no toilet paper, there's no Bounty, there's no cocktail napkins, there's no wet wipes, there's no Lysol wipes. There isn't anything. Today I saw to-go packets of Kleenex and people were in a single file line to grab those off the shelf. They literally had an attendant monitoring how many Kleenex people were taking, and we're talking about the ones you put in your pocket.
It's crazy. At the grocery store here in town, that's a little one. It's not like a ShopRite or anything. It's like 20% of the size of like a regular supermarket. But it just, they are limiting everybody. You could get, they're limiting you to like one pack of toilet paper in there, you know. So they kind of got ahead of that, because I went in there about 10 days ago and just got, you know, like just get what you need. Like you don't need to buy for sure. 2 year supply.
Sure. You know. I'm a little nervous though, man. I'm down to two rolls. And I'm just like, all right, I get to use three sheets of wipe.
You're gonna have to make a move now. I'll have to ship some to you if I need to.
Dude,
I can do that.
Oh man, I appreciate it. Cause right now I'm trying to ration out the sheets, and I'm like, thank God they're Charmaine, so they're nice and thick. But I am worried. I'm like, how much longer is this gonna go? I mean, I've been getting calls on conference calls for work where this might go on for another 4 weeks. So it's not necessarily proven that we're going to get back to work in May. We may end up going back middle of May, maybe June. And yeah, that's what we're looking at. Yeah. And I'm just still like beside myself, because it was funny. I was looking at some numbers the other day. I actually tweeted this out the other day where... Yeah. 2.8 million deaths recorded in the United States alone in 2017. Now, that's a lot of, you know, for all of you listening, if you just take out your calculator and you're like 2.8 million, and that's rounded down actually, divided into 365 days, that gives you 7,671 deaths every single day. So it's like, I'm not trying to downplay what's going on. I mean, this virus is highly contagious, but I just never seen anything in my life where society has been completely put on pause because of this. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, man? How does it got you feeling?
This is like nothing else. This is like nothing. I mean, I was in sixth grade, and this hit very close to home, 9/11, you know, it was right across the bridge. I was in sixth grade. It was a Tuesday. Yeah. I remember like it was yesterday, you know, my father still took me to soccer practice. I was the only kid that was there except the coach's kid and me, you know, and, you know, we still went to school the next day, you know, and even though things kind of shut down a little bit, we were kind of up and running in like 10 days and, you know, the nation really get gathered together, you know, and picked everybody up.
This is so
different. And the scariest parts to me, because I don't even watch the news that much. It'll get to you. You can't watch it too much.
Oh my God.
But two of my best friends that are in the medical profession, I guess you can see the level of concern on their faces. My friend told me yesterday, he's like, this is going to last 8 more weeks.
Now,
he works at Lenox Hill Hospital in the city.
How's the patient flow at Lenox Hill right now? I am curious about that.
He said that they're basically doing 80% is COVID. They're just dealing with that.
So they're packed and busy.
Yeah.
Okay, because there was this hashtag going around, film your hospital, on Twitter. And, you know, Twitter, it's for what it's worth. But there have been people tweeting live shots at hospitals that are vacated.
Yeah.
Where it's the admissions are not busy, the parking lots are empty. It's like, where's the wave of walking dead sick people just trying to make their ways to the hospital? And after seeing that, it kind of put perspective that, you know what, maybe it's not as crazy, but now you're telling me that it is, based on some of the conversations you've had with your friends.
So just with him on the west side there, it is. And then my other friend, whose wife works over here in Teaneck, New Jersey, which is one of the hotspots, a town over from us here, Holy Name Hospital, which is a hospital. I've been in that emergency room about 5 times myself.
Yeah.
With various sports injuries.
Yeah.
They are like almost at capacity.
Wow.
Employees are getting sick now. She runs the emergency room. She is
Yeah.
director of the emergency room. And, you know, to see her, it's just, she's concerned. She's like, she's like, we're handling it, but they're looking for good news in the immediate future before it just gets, if it raises one more level, they're like, they don't know if they can handle it.
Yeah. Now, you know, I can't get through one episode without at least mentioning Trump. Just for shits and giggles. I mean,
yes,
he's provided some good comic relief, I feel. And I know it's probably not appropriate to say that when we're talking about the president of the United States. I get that. But it's like when he compares his TV ratings to The Bachelor and to all these different things, you can't help but to laugh at it and to make fun. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking with Jasmine about this the other day, and she's like, yeah, you know, one part is funny, but the other part is that he's probably showing good posture by saying, oh, yeah, I'm not going to wear a mask because how's it going to make people feel the optics of it? The leader of the free world is wearing a mask, and he's probably just as scared and vulnerable as everybody else. So
I love that point from her. I love that.
Yeah. So... And I don't disagree with that point. I do agree with that point. I guess the part for me is that it's just funny when he comes out every single night. I mean, you know, it's the me show that's rolling out. I mean, you know, that's what it is. But the other side is that how do we feel? You know, I feel like he's doing what he can, in my opinion. I don't think anyone else that... I mean, this could be Obama right now. I don't know if it gets shut down as quick because of how it came about. And I think people are, you know, they're playing Monday night quarterback way too quickly by saying, oh, you know, we should have shut down things quicker. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, we shut everything down within a few days of us knowing. You know, it's not our fault that China was given mixed information back in December of 2019. And this was probably going on since November of 2019, you know? So I think that the damage was done already based on China's miscommunication of all of it. And now we're just in the middle of it, in the middle of the war. And, you know, and right now we have Trump as the leader of the free world and leading this wartime. And he's going to do it in his style and his approach. And some of it is going to be kind of brash. Some of it is just going to be, hey, listen, I'm not wearing a mask. The CDC says, you know, it's a recommendation. It's a recommendation you wear a mask, you know?
No, definitely. You know, he's trying the best he can. He definitely did not get the best, you know, the earliest heads up he could have gotten from the Chinese.
Thank you.
New York is in peril. It's the worst state. And this just doesn't seem like there's enough going on here. Like, you know, everybody made a big deal, the Navy boat showing up the other day.
Yeah.
Like, there just needs to be a little more of that. Like, I can't understand how we're in so much worse shape than California is. They got more people. They're closer to that part of the world. It just.
Yeah.
And you know, we have God only knows how many more cases than they do.
Well,
it's just.
You know what I thought, too, and not to cut you off, but, you know, Chinatown in New York is like, it's like a Chinese village that is like no other in the United States of America. And, you know, it's funny, you got Cali and you got neighborhoods and communities that are just like that. But I was talking about this, I remember back in early February and saying, hey, listen. Think about all the nail salons, all the barbers, all the services that you enjoy every single day. That's going to be where you're going to get it, you know? And New York has probably the largest population of, and I got to fact check this, but they probably have the largest population of Chinese people that it doesn't surprise me that New York got clobbered with this, you know?
You know, New York is just, because, you know, it's New York. Everybody goes there. You go to Midtown Manhattan, you can run into somebody from anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, not even LA or San Fran is on that level.
Yeah.
You know, everybody travels here. So you could be in Beijing or Hong Kong and then travel to New York and you're carrying it. And now you're going to, you know, you'll run into, you know, God knows how many people.
Yeah.
And it's mm-hmm. just different.
Yeah, yeah, man. Hey, did you get the news that James Dolan has the coronavirus?
I did. I thought it was in a little bit of poor taste on how I saw some people on Twitter almost celebrating it.
You know,
first of all, the guy's a billionaire. He's gonna get world class care. And you know, it is crazy how he can own two teams, and I know very little about hockey, but from the outside looking in, I mean, you wouldn't imagine that those two teams are run by the same guy, because the Rangers are put together. They're, you know, always competitive.
Yeah.
You know, he's never thrown anybody out of a Ranger game. And then the Knicks are this sideshow. Yeah. I mean,
here's what a sports analyst kind of talked about on the radio. He said that with hockey, the optics of it, it's hard to stand out in hockey because you have the big glass that kind of goes and it, right over the ice. So if you're sitting front row in hockey, it's not the same front row experience in an NBA game. So most of the time, he's probably in a box seat when you're talking about hockey, and he's not front and center. Yeah. But when you talk about an NBA game, it's like his arena. It's his celebrity row. It's him standing in that Dolan seat and the lights flashing right on him in the middle of the greatest arena in the sports world. And I think that's a part of it. I think it's the fame and how much you can expose it or show it off in the Garden compared to a hockey game where you're pretty much just crammed in there like raging fans inside of this pit. An NBA game is a little different. It's more of an open platform. And there's something about famous people and NBA athletes in particular. And this happens in the NFL too.
Yeah.
But this happens a lot where actors, rappers, singers, celebrities, they come to these NBA games. They want to be like Jordan. They want to be like Kobe. They want to be like LeBron and vice versa. There's this affinity that they have for each other. And James Dolan uses all of that to his benefit to put himself in the center of all that. I mean, look at the shit he pulled off with Spike Lee. I mean, I don't think I can get over that. I'm going to be talking about that for like a year.
Unnecessary. I don't know. He, first of all, he is way too sensitive. He's got rabbit ears. He throws every guy out of there who pays way too much money to watch very, very, I'll call it mediocre basketball because I'm in a good mood today.
Sure,
that, you
sure.
know, every fan that shouts at him to sell the team, you know, just ignore that stuff. Sit in a box. The Spike Lee stuff. I mean, there's not a more loyal fan of your team that spends insane amounts of money to sit in the front row, and he likes to be seen, and everybody gets that.
Yeah.
Just let him through the entrance and tell him next time we don't go that way. That's all that needed to be done. You're gonna piss off Spike Lee? He was all that was left.
Yes, and that's my point. But that's the audacity that Dolan has. He doesn't care. He's proven over and over again. He does not give a shit. He doesn't give a shit about the Knicks fan, and he showed that by how he disrespected Spike Lee. That was a representation of every single Knicks fan since his regime, since he's been in power. And you know what? I'm sick of it, man, and I'm sick of him. But anyway, I'm not going to make this the Dolan show. Let me get off of the Knicks, because if not, it's going to get dark, man. I'm going to go dark.
They need to get a GM and get this thing in the right direction and, you know, make this next lottery pick hit. It's going to be a slow grind.
I agree with that. And, you know, the other day we were talking about the Hall of Fame 2020. And, you know, there's some pretty serious names going out there right now with obviously Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. And I got to say, to me, the biggest impact of all of them, I know a lot of people are going to say Kobe, and yes, in different pockets of their careers, they've had that optimal moment where they shined brighter than anyone else, right? They were one of one. And I got to say, though, Kevin Garnett, for me, though, if you talk about the Michael Jordan impact, the LeBron James impact, Kevin Garnett is in that conversation because, A, he had the highest impact. He was drafted at a time where the last rookie was drafted in 1975. So he was a pioneer. And then what preceded him was other high school athletes who started coming into the NBA straight from high school. He had the largest shoe deal. He signed the largest contract in NBA history at the time. There was so much he did except for gain a championship ring that I feel like people are going to judge him for the amount of rings that he has compared to, let's say, Tim Duncan and some other guys. But he still won that championship, and he still was probably the emotional and defensive force to make that happen, where you can arguably say without him, they don't make it. But yeah, I get it. Without a lot of guys, they probably wouldn't make it. And you're a big Boston guy. So, you know, but speak on that a little bit. I mean, how do you feel about this Hall of Fame class that's coming in right now in 2020?
No, so this is a very impressive class. And I do agree with you on KG about coming out of high school. And, you know, I mean, you were speaking about those Boston teams. I do feel like they should have won more than one title, but they just, they were just a little too old when they got together, and they just weren't going to have that staying power.
Yeah.
You know, they got to that other finals. But, I mean, I do think he is, you know, just on career and resume-wise, he is the third out of these three.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's nothing to write home. You know, that's nothing to be ashamed of when you got Duncan, you got Kobe.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at, like, I went back 12 years just because the 2008 class was an interesting class.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it's close, but this is the most impressive Hall of Fame class we've had in 12 years.
Yeah.
And second place, I put the 09 class with, with Michael Jordan, David Robinson, and John Stockton.
Yes. Oh, any class Jordan's in is probably the class for forever, maybe top three, no matter what, no matter who's in it.
Exactly. And you got Stockton and Robinson. This one just edges it out because the three of them each have their own regular season MVP. Like, you know, Stockton never won one.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I mean, Duncan's got two, you know, and Kobe had one, and Kobe probably should have had a couple more.
Maybe. Yeah. My thing with Kobe, and I've always shared this, is that I think he's one of the greatest competitors ever, but you know, again, when you look at players within his era, there were more impactful guys throughout his career. He has the longevity. He has the Laker pedigree and the history behind it. But when you talk about when Kobe first came out, Allen Iverson was the best player in the NBA. And there was no second. There was no, I'm going to pick Kobe over Allen Iverson. That didn't exist. And then as Iverson became less relevant because, he just wasn't carrying teams to the finals anymore, you looked into Shaq. And Shaq played on the team with Kobe, where Shaq was the most dominant force in the NBA, period. And there was no two. There was no, yes, you could see Kobe on the rise of taking control of the team, but That Shaq dominance in those 3 years was something that it's hard. I mean, you could compare it to Jordan's 3 year dominance in the two three time repeats, right?
Those early teams, those are Shaq teams. You know, it was definitely Shaq was number one, and Kobe was number two.
Yeah,
there's no conversation. He gets all, you know, they win three championships in a row.
Yes,
he wins Finals MVP all 3 years.
Exactly. And now traveling along in this Kobe career, because it is 20 years, now we get past the Shaq regime, right? And then we have Dwayne Wade, who plays lights out for this 1 year period where he is the best player. And then after that, though, after 06, there's really no other best player besides LeBron James. So
it's like
Kobe got missed in that 20 years of being the best player, even when he won those championships. When he won those championships, it was largely viewed by the simple fact that Paul Gasol was part of that team. Now, I know a lot of people disagree. I mean, I've even had these battles with John Starks himself where he's talking about, you know what, Kobe is a lion. Kobe's an aggressor. He won those championships. I don't disagree with that. But it's hard to say that Kobe had the same responsibility as a LeBron James and had the dominance as long as a guy like LeBron James. So now you look at AI during Kobe's early careers. Then you look at his middle years with Shaq, and then you have LeBron, and then towards his end years, you had the Warriors dynasty. So it's kind of sprinkled in through all that, and I'm not even mentioning the dynasty of the Tim Duncan and the Spurs that happened between that on Kobe's watch, because he played in the West Coast. So it's kind of easy to make that argument when you look at it from that lens, but obviously there's more to it, right?
No, there definitely is, and we'll get to Duncan in a little bit, but, you know, definitely comparing Kobe to LeBron, you know, I mean, LeBron never had that coach, that, you know, that coach, that you know, that infrastructure that he had in L.A., because Cleveland, I mean, every time LeBron leaves, Cleveland goes right back to the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
You know, he shows up, they win 60 games, they leave, they're winning 15 games.
He comes back, they're in the finals.
LeBron brought the worst roster we will ever see to the finals. Look up that 07 roster. I can't remember all the names, but Ilgauskas, Mo Williams, Booby Gibson, and they won two.
Booby
finals,
Gibson on any team is a punchline.
Exactly. I mean, that guy was out of the league 2 years later.
Oh my God.
He's got four MVPs. He should probably have seven, you know, and this isn't about LeBron, but comparing LeBron to Kobe, you know, he got to the finals. LeBron got to the finals three times and had no shot. He was just bringing a knife to a gunfight when he played the Spurs and when he played the Warriors twice.
Yeah.
It's actually closer to three times because I'm not even counting that time that Kyrie got hurt, but once Durant got there, it just wasn't even.
Yeah.
It just wasn't even fair.
Yeah.
So you're right about Kobe, though. He probably had 1 year where he was the best player in the league. But
yeah, and that could have been that 08 year.
That 08 year, he wins the MVP, and they go to the finals, and they lose to a Boston team that was, you know, about even maybe had a little bit more talent because they had the three stars, even though they were all on the other side of 30, and it was him and Gasol.
Yeah.
And then, but those two titles do a lot for him because if he just had those three, you know, everybody would hit him with, oh, you never won that title when when you were the man.
Yeah.
So those last two, they raise his level a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not going to get to Mike, but, he's close. He's definitely, he's in the top 10. And, nothing to write home about.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And, you know, you mentioned some interesting points, and that's, that's the part where Kobe, where it's hard to even make the Mike comparisons just because, you know what, Mike winning six championships, six MVPs, going 6-for-6, never going to a game seven in the finals. It's too hard and heavy of an impact to ever compare it to what Kobe has accomplished. And at this point, when you've achieved as much as Kobe and Michael and LeBron and those guys, it's really about championships. And what Mike did, the only guy who could really put himself in that conversation, and his story has yet to be written, it's in the middle of it, is LeBron James, because he went to 8 straight finals. Yes, he doesn't have the finals efficiency as a Michael Jordan, but if he pulls out a couple titles in LA and he's been to 10 finals and 5 rings or whatever, it changes the conversation a little bit because he's probably going to own every statistical category in the sport.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm not ready to make a judgment there yet. I definitely want to see LeBron's career finish.
Yes.
But they've created like this artificial argument where it's like, well, he's 3-6 in the finals. Well, you either win the title or you don't. So I get Jordan's 6-0 in the finals, but that's just because he wasn't good enough to get there those other times.
That's a good argument. That season, that's a fair point.
That season he got back when he was wearing 45, and he comes back in like the middle of March or whatever, and they lose to Shaq. if they beat Orlando and beat Indiana and then go to the finals and lose to Houston, is that actually a worst season? Because now you can't say 6-0, it's 6-1.
I think if Jordan ever lost to Hakeem Olajuwon head up, I think it would change the narrative about Hakeem a little bit. I think the fact that Hakeem won those rings when Jordan was out, it makes Jordan the clear-cut guy. I think there is truth to your point that getting to the finals, period, is an achievement, right? And that's what I'm understanding is your point.
It definitely is. Yes, it
is. But, you know, so it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, but I think it does. I think it does matter. That's why people like Joe Montana are seen better as Brady, because Joe Montana had the lion's share of the responsibility to make sure that those teams were going to win. And with Jordan, he had that same thing and he was efficient, never lost. With Tom Brady, he's done a lot, and not to get into the weeds, but he did have those times where he did lose. And even in those victories, there were huge defensive victories with a late kick that made him win. So that's why it's hard to make those arguments. But I will say efficiency in how you win championships has to be the edge, because you have to find an edge somewhere, because if not, you're going to be going in circles with this argument, because as it stands now, LeBron has more finals experience than Jordan then. You know what I mean?
He definitely does. He definitely does. I would say if he was to win one in L.A., and he would only have four, obviously.
Sure.
But to win on three different teams, most likely be the finals MVP for all four. Yeah. You know, that would be something that nobody's ever really done. And correct. I guess, no, you know, funny done. Enough, Kawhi could also do it.
Kawhi could also do it, which is crazy. Yeah,
you know, because he's so young, but, you know, just the way it worked out, you know, and, yeah. You know, because the one from last year is probably the one that nobody saw coming. But, you know, listen, they got hot, they got fortunate, and there's nothing wrong with that, because Golden State got fortunate.
Yeah.
Many years in the middle of that dynasty.
Yeah.
Chris Paul getting hurt after game 5 of the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kyrie getting hurt in game 1 in 2015. And, you know, listen, you know, you still got to win. You still got to take it.
But you know what's funny? You know what we almost did? We almost forgot about Tim Duncan.
Yes, you know.
Look, the probably the most dominant force of that group of Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant is Tim Duncan, without a doubt. Probably the most successful out of all of them, having 5 championships, where some of those championships, other guys won the MVPs, but it was clear cut that he was the driving force, even when he wasn't the best offensive producer, right?
Yes, and I'm happy we saved him for last, because he is, you know, Tim Duncan's probably the last of anything we're going to see like that. I'm not a Spurs fan, but he's actually one of the few jerseys I own is a Tim Duncan jersey.
Oh,
I love
nice.
Tim Duncan. I love his unassuming ways. We're never going to see a star like this again, especially in this, you know, pop culture life we have now. I mean, just a guy that had nothing to say, just did his job, allowed himself to be coached.
Yeah.
Because if he was a different kind of guy, he would have got Greg Popovich fired in the middle of year 3 because they had one ridiculous argument.
Oh,
and it
would
have just been his way or the highway.
Yeah.
And they would not have won 5 titles. They probably would have won 2,
yeah.
But they weren't going to win 5. And they weren't going to have that culture.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just – that was – I think probably learned some of that from David Robinson. But, you know,
yeah.
I love everything about the Spurs. I love everything about the Spurs. And
yeah.
He's the best power forward of all time. He's got two regular season MVPs.
Sure.
You know, and honestly, my favorite finals of theirs is actually one that they lose, that 2013 final with the Heat. Because, you know, nobody thought he had anything left. And he, you know, he played 10 years younger in that series.
Oh, without a doubt.
And they lose in 7, but, you know, he.
And,
you know, he.
That season, Kawhi Leonard was a rookie. People forget. And that's why the argument with Kawhi is still being developed, because in all honesty, Kawhi gave LeBron some trouble in that series.
He drove him crazy.
Yes. But he still was a rookie. You know, so you look at that LeBron's final. It was funny. I was watching that LeBron's rerun because that's all you can watch nowadays with no sports being broadcasted. And you could see LeBron draining wide open threes. And that's because in that finals that the Spurs lost to the Heat with that famous Ray Allen three-pointer, you can see Kawhi giving LeBron a lot of respect to the drive. So he was playing off the three-point line almost 3 feet. And I said, wow, that's something he's going to learn from. And the very next year, Kawhi Leonard is the MVP of the finals. So if this becomes where Kawhi starts battling LeBron on the West Coast and gets an edge on him, I think Kawhi is building up an argument that he might be an edge even over LeBron James during LeBron James's career. And, you know, that's a stretch. I'm leaping out there. But just thinking reminiscent of that Spurs finals and just seeing Kawhi just develop and blossom from rookie to now that second year player and just completely shutting down the Heat defensively. I mean, it was just amazing.
No, definitely. I mean, what Kawhi's biggest issue is going to be is durability, because I mean, he's already getting close to 30. He already can't play. He's playing.
Yeah.
He's playing 70% of the schedule, you know, some years, you know, because he's not going to win an MVP. So he's not going to have those, you know, those accolades at the end of his career. Now, if he has five rings, you know, and he's the finals MVP of four of them.
Yeah.
Then, you know, he'll have one of the odder careers, because normally when you put a career like that together, you'll have an MVP.
You got MVPs, you got scoring titles. I mean, he does have all defense, and he's probably got Defensive Player of the Year a couple times, which that's one thing I will say that is a knock on LeBron a little bit, and I know we're going all over the map right now, but the knock on LeBron, I will say, is that his defense has been inconsistent from year to year. He can prove that he can defend with the best of them, but he's not a consistent all-defensive pro every single year.
No, he hasn't been. It's almost like he's been picking and choosing, you know, when he's going to exert himself that little extra bit. I know, like, his favorite move is like that chase down block where he comes out of nowhere and nobody sees him coming, and he puts the ball on the 15th row.
You know?
And that's his most famous moment. Iguodala.
Yeah, no. But at some point, to be that bone, that's why Kobe, honestly, is even in these conversations with LeBron, Jordan, things like that, because Kobe would say, I'm D'ing you all night long. And he would tell that to Melo. He would tell that to Wade. He would tell that to LeBron. He would tell that to Jordan. And that's one thing from LeBron you haven't seen, where he looks at you and he points the finger at Durant and he's like, I'm locking you down. You're not doing anything tonight. And we haven't seen that level of authority like we've seen from some of the other guys that we call all-time greats, at least from a wing player perspective.
No, you definitely are. You know, I remember when he was with the Heat, especially, I remember an interview with Spoelstra, and Spoelstra would just, he basically said, I'm going to wait to see who has the hot hand tonight, and I'm going to throw LeBron on him. You know, it's like you wouldn't even get one guy. It's like, you know, Ginobili was driving him nuts. LeBron go get him for a little bit. And then he would go get Parker. And then he would go, you know.
He really was Danny that guy
Green,
at one
Danny
point.
Danny Green went crazy in that series. They're like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know, he got released by Cleveland. And Cleveland was horrible again because he was gone. And the Spurs get him for nothing. And, you know.
Yeah.
He had a career because of San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. No, but
you know, and that was always LeBron. So, I mean, you're right, though. He never gave you a full 48 on the defensive end.
No. But in closing, I do agree with you on the Tim Duncan being the one to have the most accomplished of that group of the Kobe and Kevin Garnett is probably Tim Duncan, because he consistently championed a franchise and was that rock for them when there were other times where Kobe obviously had the hiccup where the Utah thing, I'm not going to even get into it, but if you know, you know. And, you know, and then obviously during his first years of winning championships, we can't forget about Shaq. Just you can't. That's too much history there to forget about Shaq. And I will say, though, it was hard to accept the fact, because I love Kevin Garnett's style so much, it was hard to accept the fact that, yes, though I like Garnett's style better, Duncan's the better player. I don't know if you've ever ran into that.
You know, I just prefer Duncan. I do. So, but, you know, one thing I did not mention about Garnett that we should have just, you know, I'll quickly drop in. You know, he got drafted to Minnesota. You know, he's a high school kid. He's 18, and he went to Minnesota.
Yeah.
They're an expansion team that's never won anything. I don't even know who his coach was.
Yeah.
And look at them now. They've been horrible again for a decade.
Yeah. No one cares about Minnesota.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, if, you know, people listening, I'm a lifelong Vikings fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been 30 years.
Nice plug.
Yeah.
Go steal a nation.
Back to Garnett. You know, he gave them the best years of that franchise. They were a one seed in the West. He won an MVP there.
Yeah.
They should have went to the finals that year. They lose to the Lakers.
Yeah.
Him and Sprewell.
Yeah.
You know, he gave that organization stability. I mean, they might have moved it if it wasn't for him. Like, they, you know.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been able to win a thing since. And they never won anything before him. You know, because he didn't get enough credit for that. You know, he built something special there. You know, they just didn't win anything. And that's okay, because it's hard to win.
It's hard to win, yeah.
He slides right underneath Duncan. Maybe he's even ahead of Karl Malone. I've never even thought about that, but he probably is.
Oh, wow. That's definitely worth a revisit, for sure.
You know, that's something we'll talk about, you know, another time, you know. But, you know, but Duncan, the stability, you know, in 19 years, they won 50 games every year. You know, he just fell under the radar that, you know, they always played a very, outside that Heat series, they always played a very boring finals. They played the Nets. Yeah. Nobody wanted to watch that finals. They played Detroit. Yeah. It was a defensive clinic, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
For sure. Wow.
But, you know, and, you know, but you'll never see another Tim Duncan. There'll never be another star of that level with an ego that small. It was refreshing to see.
It was. Know? And as consistent. Just consistent as hell, man.
You know. He would just drop 40 on you with that little 15-foot bank shot that went in every time, you know. And it was, you know, it was a pleasure to watch.
Yeah. Well, hey, Jose, I just want to thank you for coming on to the show. I mean, we could probably talk sports for another hour. But, you know, in all fairness, I want to save something for some other episodes. And this is going to be the first of many. I love you, bro. I'm so glad we were able to do this. Any final words?
No, just stay safe, you know, stay inside. And, you know, we got more than enough time. So we will... you know, we'll think of another one. We'll, you know, we'll have some fun. We'll think of another topic. And, you know, love you too. Thank you so much. You know, it's been fun.
All right, bro. Take care.
Yep. Take it easy. Bye-bye.